This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports Station. Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob right here, Seattle Sports Station on 710, as we continue to get you prepped and ready for Game 1 of the wild card playoffs between the Toronto Blue Jays and the Seattle Mariners. And who better to break it all down? Who better to talk about everything that went on this season than to bring in the voice, the one, the only, Mr. Goldsmith himself? Aaron Goldsmith is with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. How are you, man?
Oh, man, I'm great. I'm in Toronto getting set to call a postseason game tomorrow. Toronto's a great spot. This is a great ballpark. Like, ballpark's not great, but the fans are great. And tomorrow is going to be ridiculous in this ballpark. So I'm pumped, man. I'm fantastic. I'm on top of the world.
How surreal is this for you? Now, you haven't been here for the whole 20-year drought, obviously, but you're with this team day and night. You've been here for years now. I'm just curious for you personally what this means.
Yeah, I'm a half drought guy. I've been here for half, which I think I'm vested after 10 years. No, I mean, I'm so grateful that I've been here for as long as I have to really feel it, right? And obviously, I live it every day for 6 months out of the year. It is surreal, man. To me, the most surreal moment was when we saw the guys posing in the T-shirts on the field after that incredible win against the A's, and we saw the guys spraying the champagne in the clubhouse. Like, we've seen those images every year from all the other teams, right? But we've never seen it with our team, with the Mariners. So when I saw that, it was like, wow, this is actually happening. This is really a thing. This is real. That was kind of my, like, oh my gosh, we're on cloud nine moment. That was incredible. I hope I never forget what that feeling was like just to watch that happen.
Are you a believer in it was meant to be? There's just something there. Because when you talk about the moment that clinched it, and yes, it wasn't a deciding game. If they lost, they would have gone on and played another game. But for Cal Raleigh to come up in the bottom of the ninth with two outs, he's a pinch hitter. He's been dealing with a banged up hand, and he comes off the bench to pinch hit with two outs, tied at one. The offense was doing nothing for either team that night. And for him to bang one off the Hit It Here Cafe windows in that moment with a full count, It almost felt fake. It felt like a Disney script or something. And you know, you had people going, man, that's a sign. It's meant to be. I don't know about all that. But where do you fall with that kind of stuff?
If you shattered the window, I would say that it would have felt fake for sure. I know what you're saying, though. I mean, to me, it was like, hey, if you're going to wait 20 years, don't clinch on a 5-0 infield pop-up for the 27th out, right? I mean, like, make it worth the wait. And the wait may never be worth it, but nonetheless, that was as dramatic, as we all know, as it gets. And, you know, to me, to have it, not just for me, I mean, I'm sure we all share this sentiment, to have it done by a guy who was drafted and developed by the Mariners, who has had such a major instrumental piece in especially the second half of the season for the Mariners, and a guy that will be able to relish that moment with him for years, right? This isn't a guy who's going to be gone next year. Obviously, it's one of the great moments in Mariners history. And to me, the question that I'm so curious to have answered, and we won't hopefully have it answered for a long, long time from now, is on the Mariners timeline of great moments, where will that fit in? Right now, it feels like one of the great moments in franchise history, certainly, especially when you consider how a few of playoff appearances the Mariners have had since coming into fruition back in 1977. But hopefully when this era, whatever this era is and however long it stretches, when it's all done, that moment will always have a special glimmer for us because of what it meant and the drought ending. But hopefully there will obviously be many more significant wins of much greater weight than punching your ticket into the wild card. But that can't diminish the moment. It'll always have a special part, a spot in all of our hearts because of what that night felt like and what it meant for this franchise.
As far as the drought coming to an end, these guys, like I said, you haven't been here for the full 20. They certainly haven't, obviously, but they're so aware of it. They hear about it all of the time, so and they can feel it from the crowd. I can't help but think, Aaron, that they're breathing a sigh of relief. Like, that is such a massive weight to get off your shoulders. Like, okay, finally, we're talking two decades. That's all we hear about at the end of every season, and we finally got there. Do you think there's anything to the idea that now that they've overcome that. They've gotten over that hump that they can go into this series and any of the postseason games should they move on with a looseness, with a, you know what, I can breathe now. That pressure of just getting there is gone. Now we can go play baseball and have some fun.
Yeah, I think it's a good question, and I think it really depends on what chair you sit in, right? I mean, if you're Scott Service and you're Jerry DePoto, at some point, it's your employment, right? I mean, like, at some point, if you don't win enough games to get to the postseason, you won't have a job anymore. Obviously, those two have done a remarkable job working in tandem and have gotten the Mariners to this point. So for them, they must feel it, obviously, more than anyone in uniform on the field. And I think in terms of we've heard Scott, by the way. We've heard Scott, obviously, the night that they clinched. You know, has talked about this was the goal was not to get to just the postseason. The goal was to win in the postseason and to win a World Series. And we'll see how that script ends up being written beginning tomorrow night. But I think in terms of the players, they should absolutely feel loose. I mean, the Mariners have already won. I mean, the city of Seattle has won. Mm-hmm. And that's not to say that they aren't aiming for more, and they are, and they should be, and they should be thinking about how far they can go in this thing. But for everyone who has felt this, whether you have lived the drought for 1 year or 5 years, 10 or all 20, you already feel like you have won. How could you not, to have that sense of relief? And when you think about, you know, the Mariners are coming on the road, they are certainly not favored to win this series. I mean, the Blue Jays, some people thought that they would win the East. Some people thought that they would possibly win the World Series when the season began, and they should have thought that way based on the talent that the Blue Jays have on their roster. Obviously, it's been a turbulent year for Toronto. They fired their manager shortly after the Mariners swept them earlier in the summer. But they're hosting. They have a very good roster, a dynamic lineup, and they've got all-stars all over the place. So, yeah, the Mariners should feel loose that there's pressure in this series. It should squarely be on the Toronto Blue Jays for all those reasons that I mentioned. And the Mariners, I think they match up against the Blue Jays better than any team that you could pick in the American League at any point in the playoffs. I don't think there's any question about that. So they should absolutely feel loose, and they should feel like they can take this series. We all know that they certainly are capable of that.
Hey, before we get into the matchups and how you see this going, do you remember what your feeling was at the beginning of the season as you were out there at spring training watching these guys, and they made the moves to bring Winker and Gino over, and they bring in Adam Frazier and Robbie Ray? Were you thinking, I said, I think this is an 86-win team. I thought they'd have fewer wins but be a better team, because there was a lot that went their way last year to win 90 games, just a sort of luck I didn't think they would duplicate, and then they go and win 90 games this year. But I believe they are certainly a better team, a more put-together team. But what was your expectation? Do you recall?
Absolutely, I recall, and I completely agree with what you said. I thought that they were a drastically better team that would not win as many games. And it's incredible what a 14-game winning streak can do for you. Because if you look at the team the Mariners had last year, anyone who looked at any of the numbers under the hood for the Mariners last season knew right away that that was not a 90-win team. Now, your record is what it is, and you are what your record says, and I get it. And when it comes to the rubber hitting the road, if you have X number of wins, you're getting into the playoffs. So by that measurement, yes, the Mariners were a 90-win team. But you can never confuse what a team does with what a team is. I mean, the Mariners, what they did last year was win 90 games, but they were not a 90-win team. And I think the Mariners' moves in the offseason reflect that. I mean, they did all the things that they needed to do to become a better team, even if that meant they were going to win 86 games. As it turns out, pretty awesome. They've got back-to-back 90-win seasons, which is great. But, yes, the Mariners have been a much improved team this year. And as they go into this postseason now, it's because of those moves and the moves they obviously continued to make once the season began and at the deadline specifically, that gives them, I think, a really fair chance to win this series and make a good run into the postseason.
Is there a bigger addition to this team? And obviously, Luis Castillo's huge. That's a mid-season addition. Robbie Ray has been a massive addition. But the guy that I was initially very leery and critical of, just on paper, was Gino Suarez. I hadn't watched Reds baseball. I wasn't paying attention to the Reds. They were terrible. And I was looking at his numbers. He hit below 200 the year before, struck out a ton. His defensive metrics were not good. We had the Reds beat writer on who didn't do anything to talk me off the ledge. He basically said, well, he's gotten a little bit bigger, and maybe his range isn't what it was. He's dealing with injuries, rough couple of years, but he's a great guy. You know, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. Okay. And then you turn around, and he's the star of the deal. He's the guy you look at and go, what would they do without this guy? I mean, his not even just what he does on the field, which has been great, but who he is off the field and talking. You've talked to him a bunch. I've had the chance to talk to him a number of times. He couldn't ask for a better guy, and he seems to be such a calming influence in that clubhouse and just a go-to. Guys just are just drawn to him. But just how do you measure his impact on this team?
I think for the full course of 162, I think you can make a strong case he's been the second most impactful bat in this Mariners lineup outside of Julio Rodriguez. And I'm with you. It was the Jesse Winker deal, right? I mean, mm-hmm. It was the deal for Jesse Winker, and from the outsider's perspective, the Mariners were just taking on salary, relieving salary is a better way to put it, for right. The Cincinnati Reds, who were clearly selling everything. The Mariners were going to take on not a ridiculous contract by any means, but they were going to take money that the Reds didn't want to pay and would simultaneously fill a need at third base in Seattle. For, I would say, probably at some point into July, I think this tide has turned, but I think for months this season, somehow, Suarez was like the most overlooked guy in the lineup for the Mariners. And I don't know if that's because he strikes out a lot. I mean, he's a great case study. He has not only set, but he's flown by, really, the Mariners' single-season strikeout record.
Yeah.
and yet, nobody cares, man. Like, whatever. I mean, Gary Hill put it great when he and I were talking about this like a month ago. It's the cost of doing business.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is. It's the cost of doing business. He's going to punch 30 home runs. He walks. He walks more than I think people give him credit for. He's not a wild swinger. Most of his swings and misses are in the strike zone. It's not like he's chasing head, shoulders, knees, and toes. But he gives you the thunder in the lineup that you absolutely need. And that's why when his finger was injured and he went on the injured list, that's why it was such a fear for the Mariners, especially with October or the postseason looming. What would the lineup look like without him? He's just been such a critical piece. And if you look at almost any number, I mean, outside of Julio, it's really been Suarez as kind of the next guy in terms of value for the Mariners. And that's not taking anything away from anybody else. It just tells you how important Gino's been to the Mariners this year. It's been a massive pickup that none of us could have expected how impactful he would be for the Mariners. And what a bounce back, to your point earlier, what a bounce back season he would have from last year.
I love that. Not only set, but has flown by the Mariners record.
Whatever. Whatever.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be wrong about the guy. I mean, he kind of is what he was billed as being, a power guy who strikes out a lot, not a great average. That's kind of who he's been, but I think defensively he's been a very pleasant surprise. And just
He's been a top five third baseman you can make the case in the American League this year. Yeah. I mean,
and then really his personality on top of it is just
now. Other guys will have better range at third base, certainly, but he's got an absolute hose, and he makes the plays that come to him. He has been more than sufficient defensively at third base.
One guy that I think fans are desperately wanting to wrap their arms around, and at times it just you watch him, maybe his body language doesn't give you the right vibe or what have you, but you desperately want him to be great and you want to love him, is Jared Kelnick. I just think he plays with an edge that some love and some from the outside will look at and feel he's petulant or he's pouty, whatever their feeling is about him. Has he seemed different to you this time up? How do you feel about what you've seen from him since he's been called back up?
Well, we know this. If the Mariners want to get to the ceiling that we all think they can, and I'm not so much referring to this year, but more this era of Mariners baseball, like if they want to get to those heights that we all envision, it's hard to imagine them getting there without a really good Jared Kelnick, a part of this everyday lineup, right? And I'll be honest, when he was optioned back down and we didn't see him early on in September when rosters expanded, I was under the assumption we weren't going to see him at all, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the Mariners, if they were going to make the postseason, it would be without Jared Kelnick. And if they played a postseason game, it would be without Jared Kelnick. He has the talent. We all know that. It has been a matter of putting it all together. If I were to set power rankings for guys that I want to see just have an absolute dude postseason moment here in Toronto, I think it's going to happen from Julio. I expect Julio to have just something over the next 2+ days that is just electrifying, right? Mm. But for Jared Kelnick, for what it would mean to him, for what it would mean to the Mariners, and what it would mean to Seattle to have him, who I think we all agree with you. Like, we all want him to be the guy that we all believe he can be, and no doubt he believes he can be. If he were to do it on this stage, that would really be special. Because, you know, we obviously had the whole Instagram purge thing and all that, and he was obviously frustrated and disappointed, and he had his struggles at AAA this year, especially early on. Now, he came out of those prior to his recall, but it was a grind for him. You could tell just looking at what he was posting down there with Tacoma. For him to get to this moment where, I mean, if I were to guess, he's your game one starting left fielder, right? Mm-hmm. With Julio in center field and Haniger in right. To have him really have an impact in this series would just be incredible to watch, because he is a major part of what the Mariners want to do, but he's got to be Jared Kelnick, and he's still so young. He's still younger than Adley Rutschman, right, who debuted this year. I mean, Kelnick was one of the youngest players in the PCL when he was there.
Right.
We lose sight of that, but I'm really rooting for him to have a really impactful moment here in Toronto.
Well, and I'll just say this, and you brought up him playing in left field. I would take him out in left field not hitting a thing over Jesse Winker every single day. I mean, I just think, and that's the one thing, and I don't mean that as a shot at Winker. He's just not a great fielder. I mean, I think anybody that's watched understands that. But the one thing I have appreciated about Kelnick, and even his first time up this season when he was really scuffling at the plate, is he didn't take it into the field with him. He played right field at that time and was playing really well defensively. I just like his D. He's got speed. He seems to read the ball off the bat so much better than he looked in center field last year. His defense, I can appreciate that while he struggles at the plate at times, he's not taking it into the field with him.
Well, you know this. You will never question Jared Kelnick's effort.
Right.
Ever. I mean, and I can't imagine what he'll feel like here with 50-some thousand people screaming, especially those kind Canadians screaming at him in left field when he goes out there. You will never question your effort. And, you know, when you referenced the right field that he played earlier this year back in April, and, I mean, it was dynamite. I mean, it was really well above average defensive work in right field. And when I talked to him about it, he made it very clear. Like, I'm taking pride in my defense. I don't just want to be a hitter. Now, obviously, he was struggling hitting, but he's forecasting further into his career. He believes, and he should, that he will be a good hitter, and he wants to be a complete player. I mean, this is a guy who, before he ever stepped foot on a major league field, I mean, I got to give him credit for this. He's talking about being in the Hall of Fame one day.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, it's easy to laugh at now based on the start to his major league career, and yet the expectations that we had for Julio, we had for Kelnick when he debuted, right? I mean, it was the same level of hype. The industry had the same level of admiration for him as a young prospect, really, as they have had for Julio. There's just one obvious difference. Julio's had an all-time, you know, one of the historic rookie seasons, especially for a rookie at 21 years old. And for Kelnick, it's taken longer. There's still reason to believe that it will happen. And just because it has happened, just because it has not happened yet doesn't mean it won't. But some guys, it just takes a little more time. It takes a little more patience. And hopefully what we've seen in his recall, when he's hit the ball hard, he has made really quality contact. We've seen the extra bases, especially the home runs, the doubles. And he hasn't chased as much. And he's been much better left on left against those breaking balls. A number of at-bats really stand out on that. Even if they haven't resulted in hits, he's had competitive at-bats, which is a far cry from what we saw earlier this year or last year. So I think there's reason to believe that things are on the up, trending in the right way. And, hey, if the Mariners want to be in the postseason year after year after this season, if you have a dynamic Jared Kelnick, if it can get to that, I mean, that's one of the key ingredients. There's no question.
Be huge. Hey, before I let you get out of here, we've got a few moments left. I got to ask you about this series. And you know, we always hear the old adage, you know, it's pitching and defense. Pitching and defense are going to win games for you. And the Mariners have had that. Yeah, they've had lulls here as of late defensively. And, you know, but if we're just going in totality, their pitching and their defense, you know, talking starting and relief pitching, those have been the constants. The offense has been the up and down. You know, you don't know what you're going to get each and every night. Having said that, you look at just about every offensive metric for this Toronto Blue Jays team, and you go, my goodness, they're top five in basically anyone you want to pick out of the sky. It doesn't matter. This is a masher of a team. Yes, they took 5 of 7 in the regular season. So let me ask you this. A, do you believe in any carryover? Do you look at that as a sign of things to come, taking 5 of 7? And B, are you buying into, all right, they've got the pitching and defense to shut down an offense that seems as long and as potent as just about any in baseball?
To answer the first part of the question, I believe in 0% of the carryover, even if that favors the Mariners on paper. I mean, the Mariners, when they saw Toronto back in Seattle for that four-game series, and it was historic, right? The Mariners had never swept a four-game series at home against the Blue Jays, and they did. Well, it was the worst version of the Blue Jays all this year. It was so bad that less than a week later, their manager was fired. I mean, Bo Bichette was maybe the worst version of himself as a big league hitter.
Right.
He's now the best version of himself as a major league hitter. He's been one of the best hitters in baseball over the last month and change. So none of that matters. I really equate it, truly, to nearly the same difference as the final game of the Cactus League and opening day. Like, none of it matters. And there were some wonky things in that Blue Jays series at home that went the Mariners' way, and they will cash those wins in, and they should. But this Blue Jays team is different. The Mariners team is different. They're better now as well. The Blue Jays are certainly better. In terms of the matchup itself, the Blue Jays, I mean, the one thing that they are really susceptible to, yes, they have a bunch of mashers. They got a bunch of great big league hitters, Silver Slugger Award winners, so forth and so on. The obvious thing is they're so right-handed, and the Mariners have a bullpen full of just slider cyborgs that are right-handed. And they can, in theory, kind of chew some of those guys up in short spurts. And you have Luis Castillo, who, I mean, if you look at any team that he would have faced, and I know I referenced this earlier, any team that he could face in this postseason, I really can't think of a better matchup than the Blue Jays. Now, obviously, don't misconstrue what I'm saying. The Blue Jays are capable of, you know, hanging a four spot on Castillo or any of those relievers at any point of the game. It's the big leagues and it's the postseason. However, there's no question. I think the Mariners, when you throw Castillo out there in game one, you give yourself as good of a chance to take game one in Toronto against the Blue Jays as any other team would have if they were in the same position. I mean, if you can get Castillo through five, I mean, you want to get greedy, get six, and then you turn it over to those guys in the back of the bullpen, even if it's five, and you pivot with Brash, and then you have Munoz for the big dogs in that lineup of the Blue Jays, plus you have Seawald. I mean, that's a great recipe with the sliders that they're throwing out there. Now, the Blue Jays, you look at their platoon splits, it's not like they've really been bad against right-handed pitching, but the difference is they're going to face it for a full nine innings, and they're going to face essentially the elites of their respective positions for those nine innings. So, hey, it's not going to be easy. We all know that. But I think the Mariners and Scott Servais, he will do everything he can to win game one of this series, obviously. Winning game one is so mega. It's so important. But if you take game one, what a difference that makes going into game two. I said it earlier. I'm sure the Blue Jays are favored in this series, and I'm sure they should be based on just all the ingredients that go into this three-game set, specifically being in Toronto. But I feel as good of the Mariners' chances in this series as I would against any team that they would face in the postseason, really.
Well, I absolutely cannot wait. This has been so surreal. And just, you know me, I just adore the sport. I this is a huge moment. So I cannot wait. Goldie, I'm not saying this because I'm talking to you right now. I've sent you texts throughout the season. You have absolutely crushed it this season, man. You have had such an awesome year, so many great calls, and really the only thing missing from the clinching game the other night was your voice. And congrats on your season. It's been awesome. And let's hope we're hearing much more of you through this postseason, past the Blue Jays, and we're talking about another series. But thanks, as always, for taking the time, man.
Oh, Bob, that's incredibly kind of you. Those words really mean a lot to me, and it's been great to be on with you. And, hey, I'm with you, man. I cannot wait until tomorrow night. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. There's Aaron Goldsmith. Really good stuff from him. If you came in the middle of that or missed it, it will be available for you on the podcast page at seattlesports.com. You can also go to seattlesports.com/Bob or seattlesports.com/Wyman for all of our video breakdowns, Bob's baseball breakdowns, Dave's football 101, all the articles, everything's right there. So a one-stop shop at seattlesports.com/Bob or /Wyman. Coming up, how will the Mariners best utilize their pitching? We're going to get into the details of that coming up. It is Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Dave, I thought you were great with Goldie. I mean, you were just, you were concise.
This is my best segment ever.
Yeah. I mean, you were stealth. It was really good.
I'll tell you what, I'm glad you said everything you said, because he's just, he does such a good job. And like I said, I like when he kind of pokes Blowers, who's very deadpan and hilarious in his own right. And yeah, it's a good group. We're pretty blessed here.
Yeah, I mean, that the whole Mariners crew. I mean, Sims does a great job.
Yeah.
Obviously, Riz is just, he's love Riz, man. He's just such a great guy. And
Gary Hill.
Yeah, everybody.
C-Raj on the, and sometimes Lefko is,
yeah,
okay.
Well, let's not get crazy. Let's slow down, okay? Lefko hasn't earned his stripes yet.
I always listen to Lefko. I write down all the words that he uses, like he had some very sophisticated word one time. I was like, whoa, look at you. Somebody must have broke out the thesaurus.
It was that word a day toilet paper. That's what
word
I did.
Word a day toilet paper. Anyway, yeah, it's and it's very personal to people. Like, I want my, you know, like we're gonna have ESPN calling the game. I'm like, no, I gotta have my guys, man. You feel like you know them, you know.
The 907 says, Dave had some of the best questions I've ever heard for Goldie. Killed that interview, Dave.
Thank you.
It's a good to talk. He's just one of those guys that I could geek out with and just sit there and talk baseball with for hours. It's just, it's a, you know, baseball's just got that romanticism attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just one of those sports. It just, unlike that, and I love NBA. I know a lot of people hate it. I love NBA. I love the NFL. There's just something about baseball that's, it's kind of this weird bonding thing you had with your dad, maybe your grandfather, a brother, whatever, growing up, learning to play. It just takes on in the movies that have been made about it. I don't know. There's a romantic nature to the sport that, for me, doesn't exist with other sports.
That's very true. You know, remember in Moneyball where he says, how do you not get romantic about baseball?
Yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is, I think that as far as the guys calling the game, there's so many opportunities to tell stories, and that's the beauty of it. And when you really feel like you get to know somebody, and what some of my favorite things, like, I love it when Sims, anytime, it was always with Otani, anytime a pitch got anywhere near Otani, and he is very skittish. Like, if you, I don't know if you saw one time there was a catcher that threw a ball back to him and he didn't see it. And at the last second, he saw it and he just freaked out. Like, his arms went up and everything. So whenever that happens and then people start booing, Sims will go, come on, people.
I like that. I also like him on Twitter when people get mad at him because he's not somebody who's playing into the whole superstition of baseball. Oh, yeah. Like, if there's a no-hitter going on, he's not dancing around. He'll say, yeah, and so far, no hits through six innings or whatever it is. And people get sideways with him on Twitter. And his response to them, like, you're going to jinx it. What's the matter with you? Call him a name, and then he just writes back, stop embarrassing yourself.
That's a great response. Yeah, I had a lady one time in 2019 come up to me and tell me that I was the reason why Russell got picked off. It was in the Baltimore game. And, yeah, you jinxed him there. And she was dead serious. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
That's it. It's, I mean, I guess of all sports, baseball, I think, lends itself to superstitions more than any other.
Right.
I mean, just in terms of dealing with players and, you know, if things are going well, a lot of them are going to wear the same socks. They're going to eat the same meal. They're going to arrive at the same time. They're going to try to replicate whatever took place that day that they had all the success. I'm doing that again. And until it goes away, I'm not changing it. And you see a lot of that in baseball.
Well, I wonder if it's just because, you know, like, you could go from having a 4-for-5 night, hit a home run, 3 RBIs, to 0-for-5 the next day.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
And I don't know, the difference in performance day to day varies more, I think, in that sport than any other sport.
Yeah.
You don't go and make, you know, 15 tackles and then go out the next day and have 13 missed tackles.
Yeah.
You know, it's, that's where I think it lends itself to the superstition.
Yeah. It's, I love it. I just love the sport so much. And to have a team here in Seattle that's finally having some success and they've got a shot and they're, you know, there's going to be all these teams at home sitting on the couch watching, and the Mariners are going to be one of the teams that are playing.
Yeah.
And we've gotten used to that and spoiled with the Seahawks. They're in the playoffs every year. You're just like, yeah, okay, how far are they going to go? It's not if they're going to get there. What are they going to do when they get there?
Yeah, nobody's crying in the stands when they make it to the playoffs. Right?
No, because you're just like, it's old hat. Yeah, they're there every year. You know, now maybe that changes for a couple seasons. We'll see. But for the Mariners, 22 decades. It's just just remarkable. But just talking about, you know, the pitching and everything, and when we look at the matchups, you feel like the Mariners have the edge when it comes to pitching and defense. Just if we're just going by numbers, and when you look at the numbers, the offensive advantage clearly lies with the Toronto Blue Jays, and we did have that comment from Service announced that Castillo and Ray would be 1 and 2, but saying that the results on Friday could lead to adjustments in game two. We're left to speculate what exactly that means. Does that mean, you know, you like I speculated, all right, if Castillo goes out there and just dominates a right-handed heavy lineup and he's a righty, does he then say, all right, well, I like what I saw in that. Let's go with another power righty in Logan Gilbert, and we'll put Ray in game three should it be necessary. Does it mean we got a short leash with Robbie Ray if it feels like he doesn't have a stuff? Gilbert's going to go in there. So he'll be right there ready to go in game two if we need him. I'm wondering what it is that he would see on Friday that would alter who the starter is for game two.
Yeah, and I wonder if he'll even, you know, divulge it afterwards. I would love to be on the inside and see how much thought goes into that. And this is where, you know, Service is going to, you know, earn his stripes because, deciding when to pull somebody, and if it's like
maybe game the leash
three,
is a lot shorter probably.
Yeah, and game three, I mean, you know, maybe you put another starter in there that's ready.
Yeah.
Maybe it's Marco is the matchup to, you know, as far as, you know, who you're gonna fire in there. The thing that scares me is the stat that Son of Augustifson sent that, I mean, they're top five and all everything, but seventh in home runs and then the seventh fewest strikeouts. So, you know, a lot
putting
of times,
the ball in play.
Yeah. And, you know, you guys were talking about Gino strikeouts. How many do you have? 196?
Yeah, he was four short of the league lead. Kyle Schwarber led all of baseball with 200 even, a nice even number, 200 strikeouts.
Right.
And number two in all of baseball was Gino Suarez at 196.
But he's had a great year, as you guys talked about.
Yeah,
biggest surprise.
Yeah, well, as Goldie said, what'd he say? He's not only surpassed it, he's flown by the Mariners record. However he phrased it cracked me up about him just busting the Mariners record for strikeouts in a season. But as he said, nobody cares.
Yeah.
Nobody cares. All right, a reminder, make sure you stop by Seattle Sports live broadcast at Hatback Bar and Grill. We're going to be taking you all the way up to Mariners Wild Card pregame show at noon, and that's tomorrow with Bump and Stacy starting at 10 a.m., and then again on Saturday at 10 a.m. with a special Mariners playoff show hosted by me, Mike Salk, and Ryan Roland Smith. So the three of us will be out there Saturday, Bump and Stacy there tomorrow. 10 a.m. tomorrow, 10 a.m. Saturday. And if you haven't seen the Hatback Bar Grill yet, you're going to want to get out there, check it out, just like the rest of us. So come on by, say hello if you're out there tomorrow or Saturday. Love to see you guys. Love being around baseball fans. So come on out and say hi. Meanwhile, Bobby Wagner showed signs of his old self on Monday night. We're going to hear about that when we sweep the dial. Coming up, it's Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Scanning the airwaves for the most interesting and entertaining stories of the day. Sweeping the dial. Every afternoon at 4:45 with Wyman and Bob.
Well, we've been so impressed with Julio Rodriguez all season long for his on-field performance. But how about after the game on Wednesday? Only a rookie. Julio's just 21 years old. And he decided he wanted to grab the mic and thank the fans for everything they've done for the Mariners all season.
First of all, I want to say thank you to everybody that is here right now. You guys, Mariners fans, are really the best. I thank you for always supporting us throughout the whole year. Thank you for believing in us. I know we fell short last year, but you guys still believing in us, and we're here right now. We're going to go to the postseason. We're going to have all of you guys in our heart. And we're going to give our best for this city and every single one of you guys. Let's keep on going. See you on Thrice. Let's go!
Just doing everything he can to ensure that he is going to be the most beloved sports figure in Seattle.
Yeah, he had the crack of the voice there, but he even had the motto, see us rise.
Yeah. Yeah, he's very polished for a guy in his first season who's 21 years old. He just seems to know how to answer questions. You can see the wheels turning when we had him at Edgar's. You know, he's not going to say anything controversial. He just seems like he's well schooled. He's well versed in sort of how to handle media, how to do these things, and sort of ingratiate himself to be. He's just a good kid all the way around and a hell of a player.
I'm going to go ahead and make a guess that he's going to sell more 44 jerseys than Boz ever sold.
I'm going to say you're probably right.
Remember, that was Boz's number, 44.
Was he 44?
Yeah. Well,
I bet he sold a boatload of those, though, initially. There was a lot of excitement about Boz in this town.
He wore it in the preseason, I think, and then the rules back then were you had to have a 50 or a 90 number, and he went to 55. But
that's what I was thinking. 50.
44. I mean, that's one of those that, like 24, you know, Ken Griffey, that everybody knows. I mean, typically in baseball, you don't really look at the jersey numbers. We know Sewald's 37. You know, but I mean, most players, it's you don't recognize based on their number, and Julio's transcending that for sure.
Sweeping the dial.
Well, we won't find out the postseason roster for the wild card round until tomorrow, but Marco Gonzalez, not likely to be on it after 106 pitches yesterday, gave the Mariners an incredibly important seven innings, and he talked about his mindset going into the start.
That was a huge role for them to put on me, and I embraced it, you know, to be able to, you know, just empty the tank, as he said, and we talked about, to be able to give us a chance to be fresh going into the games. I mean, I welcome that. That's a huge role for me, and so anything I can do to put us in a good position going into the playoffs is what I'm here for.
You know, I hope people appreciate that about him. I mean, everybody will say, well, he gets paid millions of dollars. He should do whatever they tell him. Yeah, that's how it goes. But there are a lot of egos and personalities involved in professional sports. And this guy's been your opening day starter for a number of years. He was at the top of the rotation for a number of years. And that has since changed, obviously, with the additions of Luis Castillo and Robbie Ray and the way Logan Gilbert is pitching. He has worked his way down the rotation. But he, along with Mitch Haniger, the longest tenured Mariners here, and he is sort of relegated to, we need you just to go deep and so that we don't burn up our bullpen. That's your role now. Instead of being the guy that would go in game one, you're now the guy to help save the bullpen for the playoffs. And the way he embraced it, the way he took it on and just said, let's go, let's do it. I give him a ton of credit for that, because you could easily have hurt feelings and feel like, hey, man, I've been giving my everything I've had to this organization for a number of years and been the guy you've leaned on, and now you want me just to be the mop-up guy, so to speak, and save the bullpen.
That's why he's the leader on this team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that guy is just, he's sort of the sheriff, right? I mean, he sort of sets the tone, I feel like, and still reflect back to when he was giving Adam Ray a hard time from the... It's like, yeah, was that you? Were you the guy? Yeah, you're the reason why you have a pitch clock.
You're a human rain delay, man.
Yeah, no, he's just such an awesome guy to have on your team, and yeah, filled that role and didn't even, you know, blink, didn't think about himself, and that's the thing that stands out about him, is selflessness.
Sweeping the dial.
How about Bobby Wagner? Delivered a big hit in Monday night's Rams 49ers game. Not a fan, though. But he explained afterwards why he went to tackle the streaker.
I just saw somebody running on the field, and he looked like he wasn't supposed to be on the field. So I saw security was having a little problem, so I helped him out.
Well, and the other part of the story that is just beyond lame is the guy that ran on the field is now filed charges or a complaint or whatever it was with the authorities against Wagner. You ran onto the field. What do you expect? That everybody should just go, excuse me, sir, could you please come here? We're not touching you, but could you come over here? No. You run onto the field. You're on your own. I'm all for whatever happens to you, you deserve. And if a linebacker wants to freight train you, and he's lucky Bobby didn't do that. He hit him, but he didn't plow him like a ball carrier. He could have knocked that guy's head off.
Yeah, if he'd have put his head down.
Yeah.
Bobby keeps his head out of the game.
He could have gone helmet to helmet on him.
Yeah.
Helmet to skull.
I like how all of a sudden now he's the innocent victim. But, yeah, you know what? There was a playoff game last year. I think it was the Bills in Kansas City where a receiver came out of the huddle, ran over, and knocked a fan down that was out on the field. But I go back to Mike Curtis. He's played for the Baltimore Colts back in the day. and he passed away at age 77. He played for the Seahawks for a little while, like for 1 year, I think, during that veteran draft year, their first year. And, he just took a fan out just entire. And when somebody asked, why'd you do that? He goes, guy's breaking the law.
Yeah, I'm with him, man. You run onto a field in any event, you run on the court, whatever happens to you. You had it coming. All right, coming up, John Morosi will join us to set the stage for this Mariners-Blue Jays series. Can't wait to talk to him. He's always a ray of sunshine for us. That's coming up next as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob on the home of the Mariners playoff run, Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.